It is a painful process to God. And every day is Calvary to Jesus until we quit sinning. Every day he is crucified afresh. And so he wakes up to the horror of sin again every day. While we laugh at sin, we cultivate it. We become comfortable with it. And our precious Savior is going through Calvary again, while we, heedless and neglectful, do not evict sin from the soul by the act of the soul itself. Now, we have studied how the equipment is there, and I have also alluded to the fact that there are things that we can do that make it so that the immune system does not work so well. Let's study how we can keep the immune system healthy. First and foremost is to keep the circulatory system excellent, and we can have an index of that by the resting pulse rate. Resting pulse is the pulse rate that we have when we have been sitting for at least 2 minutes, and we just reach up and put a couple of fingers on the carotid artery or on your radial artery and just check your pulse, count it. It should be below 80, well below 80. And if it isn't, you may be in trouble. How would you suggest that you could keep it below 80? By exercise. But I thought that exercise made the pulse rate go up temporarily. But because of the strength gained by the exercise, the heart can then spend more time in its cycle in rest than it does in work. And that then makes the heart strong, and it also makes the circulatory system strong. It makes our arteries, the very exercise of dilating, helps to clean out things that might otherwise accumulate in the wall of the blood vessel. And this can be squeezed out and moved along so that it doesn't accumulate in the blood vessels by our sluggishness.
Question.
All right, that's a good question. How would you, if you were touring as we do, how would you get exercise? Let me say that it is a trial always, but it is constantly in our minds. So when we stop to gas up, one person is appointed to do the gassing up and driving this time, and the rest of us refresh ourselves, and then we head off down the expressway and we walk as fast as we can, and then the person who is driving does everything, pays the bill, and then comes along and picks us up, and we try to see just how far we can go before the person picks us up. And some people are a 1 mile pickup person, and others with their pit stops give us a mile and a quarter before they pick us up. But that's one of the things that we do. After we eat, if we have to eat in the van, we don't settle down to reading. We start singing. And somebody will bring out a guitar, and Don will get his guitar there, and he starts playing away, and Sonia starts singing, and Kristen starts harmonizing, and I start looking for songs that we can sing. So this way we get as much exercise as we can. Then when we get to the place, we always try to get an hour early, an hour before we need to start setting up for the program, so that our team can take a walk. So we generally tell the pastor we're going to get there early and we'll take a walk. We'll be parked behind the church, and if there's a place nearby, if you need to get in touch with us, we'll be out there walking away to try to get the exhaust out of our lungs and the kinks out of our legs. And we are constantly working at it. We do make provision for it, I would like to say. We make provision for it. You do not just naturally fall into exercise. You must provide for it. And if you're an introvert, as I am, you may need a little extra pressure to get out of doors. And what I like to do is to have a scheduled time where others are involved. Preferably that others come to my house and pick me up to go for it. Because if I have to go to their house, I can find some reasons to call and say, today, you know, I'm just under so much pressure, I can't go today, tomorrow maybe. But if they come to my house, and I have had it many times that when my exercise partner walks into my yard, I put the phone down or closed my books or whatever I was feeling pressured to do and ran to get my exercise clothes on so that I wouldn't be too late to join my partner. In that way, you will find that there is a little coercion to getting exercise. Don't neglect it. Quote, let some portion of every day be spent in outdoor exercise. Let's all say that together. Let some portion of every day be spent in outdoor exercise. That is a command from heaven. Receive it and do just that thing. Next thing, keep the white blood cells healthy, these that we have been studying. Keep the usual level of white blood cells below 5,000. Now, there is no external way that you can know that. You have to just take a sample of blood and see what it shows. But some of you may have had your blood taken. The doctor may have called you and said, oh, I don't know why. I don't know what's wrong with you, but something may be wrong with your bone marrow because your white blood cell count was only 3,200. And I just don't know what could be wrong with you. I've had I don't know how many calls from all over the country, sometimes even from a foreign country. Someone will call and say, oh, do you have any suggestions for me? Is there anything that can bring up my white blood cell count? Doctor finds nothing wrong with me except that my white blood cell count is low. Well, have you been exposed to any bad chemicals? No. Well, have you had any serious illness? No. Do you have any pets in your home that have been sick? No. Are you a total vegetarian? Oh, yes. I've been a total vegetarian for the last 8 years. That's your cause. Because total vegetarians carry a low white blood cell count. Why? Because they don't need a big army on duty all the time. So a big army on duty all the time is for the purpose of keeping things cleaned up, keeping germs killed, keeping a watch over the viruses that you have taken in, and a lot of other things that the chemicals that are present in the animal products that are taken in. And so the person who eats meat or milk or eggs, and especially cheese, must have a big army on duty all the time so that these substances that are present in animal products can be taken care of. So one of the ways that you can let your white blood cells take an R&R over in Hawaii and just be refreshed. They sit out there in the sun and just so refreshed. And then if a germ comes along, oh, they're strong and healthy and ready to hit them with a wallop. And that's exactly what total vegetarians do. So it's a rare thing that you will hear of a total vegetarian having an infection because they just don't get the earaches, the sore throats, the skin infections, the boils, so forth, that people do who have a jaded, fatigued army of maybe 8,000 or 9,000 cells on duty all the time. The bone marrow is always having to produce these extra white blood cells, and they are always in battle and a little bit on the tired battle fatigue side. There are some other things that we can do to the white blood cells. We'll study that in a bit. The next thing is to keep the blood cleansed by drinking plenty of water. How much is plenty of water? Now, as we get older, we get sort of dried up like a prune, and we don't need so much water anymore, do we? That was a trick question. As we get older, the skin gets thinner, And we lose water more readily. Consequently, we need more water as we get older than we did before, especially when we pass the age of 50. And that's especially so for women, because women get even thinner skin than men do, lose even more water, and women may need a good bit more water than men do. And people who talk a lot, and women, unfortunately, you know, with talking, they sometimes might need a little more water. For every hour that you talk on the phone, you need a full glass more of water than you would if you didn't talk on the phone. Question.
I was wondering, we've seen so many elderly patients come into the hospital dehydrated.
Yes, dehydrated.
So much more than the middle-aged or
the elderly. Yeah, the elderly.
I wonder if the first center of the body doesn't just deteriorate with age.
Precisely. That's right. They don't get thirsty. They don't exercise so much. And exercise is one of the things that stimulates the thirst center in the brain and makes one want to drink more water. So they have a vicious cycle. They're losing more water. They want less water. And sometimes the food that they eat has less water in it. So they're just in a bad way. And so you're quite right that older people are often brought in a state of advanced dehydration.
And you can drink too much?
Oh, yes, you can drink too much. And but usually that's psychotic people who drink too much. But if we drink too much, we can wash out B vitamins that we shouldn't be washing out. And also we can so dilute our minerals that we can actually be in a state of sickness. And water intoxication is a very real problem. And every large hospital will see one or two cases of water intoxication every year where people have just drunk too much. Well, you can't really define how much is too much because it depends on the kidney function and how much they sweat and how old they are and a lot of other things. But it is true that there is an optimum amount of water that we should drink. Beyond that is too much. Not that much is not enough. And so we need to be careful that we get enough. How much is enough? We need to drink water until the urine is pale. Now, some people are so constituted in the mind that if half gallon is good, 3 half gallons is 3 times as good. But that really isn't true. We need just enough to bring us to that point. And once we have come to that point, then we need to sort of back off a little bit with the water. Don't drink too much. It can interfere with your sleep and do some other things. Yes?
Is there an amount that you can kind of make an estimate?
Yes. We can sort of make an estimate even with a child. It's still 8 glasses. But it's 8 child's glasses. And a little bitty child has a little bitty glass, and a bigger child has a little bigger glass. So you just, each child has his own size glass. And what I like very much is a system that a friend of mine showed me when my children stayed a while in her home. She had a little chart that she put up on the board on the wall beside the sink, and each child had his own glass with his own name on it, depending on the size of the child. So my son had the smallest one; he was the youngest one, and then her daughter had the next largest one, and my daughter had the next largest one, and right on up to the oldest daughter, who was a full-size person. And so they each one made a little tally. Every time they drank a glass of water, they just put a tally there, and they had to have 8 during the day. And I thought that was a good little principle.
We have the little charts with tiny little stickers.
Yes, that would be a good thing, too, to do that same kind of thing. 8 glasses is what they should do. For me, I find it better to start in the morning, and I like to have something that's rather elegant. I don't really like something that's inelegant like this, but I was a little without my equipment and handicap. So in a pinch, you have to let anything do. And this is, while it's a little inelegant, you can get the point. You fill this up in the morning, and then you can't go to bed until it's all drunk. Got to all be gone before you can go to bed. That's right. Half gallon is 8 glasses. And that's generally speaking about right. Now, when I speak, when I have a lecture, then it's an extra glass per hour. Mm-hmm. Every hour I speak, need an extra glass. If it's hot and you sweat, for every hour that you sweat profusely, another glass.
What about flying?
Flying in an airplane? I'm not aware that causes extra loss of fluid. You're probably right. I'm just not aware. Yes, I always inquire of the stewardess, where is your water? Where's the water dispenser? And most of big planes have a water dispenser back near the lavatories.
I think it is dehydrating to fly.
It may be. I had not. Yeah, it may be. There are probably studies done on it. I'm just unfamiliar with them. All right. Pale. It shouldn't be absolutely water-colored. If it's absolutely water-colored, either you're not taking in enough B vitamins or you're drinking too much water. You might produce one specimen occasionally that's entirely water-colored, and it wouldn't be too much. But if you're constantly producing urine specimens that are water-colored, that's probably too much.
You know, sometimes your job is such that you can't just drink it anytime.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Maybe 3 times a day or something, yes. You know. And then your urine will look very, very pale the first or 2 seconds after that.
Yes. That kind of program is best. Now, what she described was this, that if your job attracts your attention so that it's not possible for you to drink a lot of water on a regular basis throughout the day, you could drink, say, 4 glasses in the morning and 4 glasses in the afternoon all at one time. Is that all right? That's better than nothing, but probably not as good as drinking a little more regularly throughout the day. But I find my schedule is often that way, that either water isn't available or it is impossible for me to just stop and take some. And so I may go several hours without taking any. Then I must take several glasses. Another indicator to you as to whether your water intake is adequate is whether your lips are chapped. If the lips are chapped, that probably means you're not taking in enough water. Women who get cystitis are probably not taking in enough water. Any woman who just feels all in, I haven't done any work, but I sure don't feel good. I'm just so tired. I just need to go to bed. I meet a lot of women who are in that condition. Often that's because they are just wilted. Their flower has just wilted over, and all they need to do is to drink water. I recommend to them drink a glass full of water every 10 minutes for an hour. Don't stop. Just keep on going till the whole hour has gone by. That will usually produce a very pale urine by the end of the hour. Lita.
Should your urine be completely odorless?
The question is, should the urine be completely odorless? And the answer is, it depends. If the urine has been stored in the bladder for some hours, it will already have undergone a process of breaking the urea down into ammonia. So there should be then some ammonia odor. Also, if you eat certain foods, it will impart an odor to the urine. So asparagus and garlic and onion and some other things will impart an odor to urine. And that's normal. Yes. Yes, I know lots of people who don't drink any water at all. And that is unhelpful. It encourages immune system problems. We need to recognize that much in the way of hay fever is due to chronic dehydration. Because when the substances come into the body, they find there, they are concentrated as they hit the body. The body cannot dilute them, cannot wash them away, cannot properly transport them to a place of detoxification, and therefore the body is injured. So anyone who has a problem with any kind of allergy should take note duly that extra water is needed. Now let's say you have a cold. With a cold, just the very act of having a cold will make you need 2 glasses more per day just by having a cold. And if you do very much in the way of having a fever, 2 more glasses in the day. So drink plenty of water. Lots of water is good for us. Now, when do you drink it? You set the table with lots of ice water? You should drink well before the meal begins, as much as you can, and wait some little time after the meal is finished before you drink again. I know that somebody is going to say, well, give me a number of minutes. And you can't really do that because it depends on the weather, how hot it is, how much salt is in your food, what your status is, how much talking you are doing or have done. It just depends on a lot of things, and therefore there's no way that anybody could say it's 30 minutes before the meal and don't drink after that, because some people in a state of dehydration could drink even 2 minutes before the meal, and most of it would be absorbed before the food even got into the stomach. So because water can be absorbed very quickly, much more quickly than food can, and after the meal, sometimes my grandchildren will say, Grandmother, can I have some water? And I say, can you wait 3 minutes after the meal? Yes, I could wait 3 minutes. Well, often they forget about it and they wait 5. And I say, do you need it right now, or you want to wait 5 more and let your stomach do a little more churning and digestion? Yes, I could wait 5 more minutes. And sometimes they'll wait 10 more. But if they say, no, I'm so thirsty, I just need it now, I get it now for them. And let them have a little bit and just a few sips, and to sort of get the edge off their thirst, and let them wait as long as they can after they eat before I give them much in the way of water.
I think most of us came up in a home where beverage was served with every meal.
Uh-huh, I did too. Lots of it. Great big glass of iced tea or iced lemonade with lots of sugar in it.
That's what we drank.
Yes.
With our meal.
Yes.
It was an Adventist home. And I had fourth grade health class. I remember learning we should drink 8 glasses of water a day.
Yes.
Between meals. Yes. Not to eat between meals. You know, we learned some of those principles. But they were just something you learned and wrote down on a piece of paper.
Precisely. Now notice here.
It's something that you've incorporated into your life, because when you're 10 years old, you don't go home and revamp your home.
Your parents.
But what I'm saying is, you know, when you spend 40 years living like that,
yes,
it takes more than a 4-day seminar to change that.
Absolutely. But there are some things that you can change right now. And everything that you can change right now, you should do it and make a list of those things and then make provision for it. Change everything that you can change right now. You can't change your recipes right now, just overnight. There are some recipes you can change, but you don't know how to cook everything that, say, a cook could, who has been in this for 20 years could cook. You need some recipes. And if you only learn 3 recipes here at UT Pines and you go back and you present those 3 recipes for 45 days on a stretch, your family will say, Mama, I wish you'd go back to cooking unhealthfully. So you need to just like I'm telling you, when I learned a new recipe, I'd put it in. Maybe I'd put it in once a month. Then the next month, maybe by that time I'd learned another recipe. So then I'd put it in the month's menu. So I made out my menus for the month.
What about liquids with milk and water?
We stopped that immediately. Yeah, once. Yeah, immediately. Uh-huh.
And if you start drinking 8 glasses of water immediately?
Absolutely, immediately. Let me tell you my experience with the big breakfast. I learned that we should eat a big breakfast every morning. Breakfast had never been very big. It was a slice of toast with some jelly and margarine on it, and a cup of coffee and a cigarette. That was about breakfast. maybe a donut on Sunday morning or a cinnamon roll heated in the oven. That was breakfast usually. So the first morning is this should come out in life and health, breakfast. So I wrote it out for my cook, and she said, "Oh, Miss Thrash, you're going to have that much breakfast?" I said, that's our breakfast. So she cooked it out. She was an excellent cook. And she had the best meal, breakfast. And I said, "You're supposed to eat it." So we sat down and ate it. And I remember it had hot chocolate, and it had scrambled eggs. And I don't remember what else, but it was a big breakfast. And I ate it all. And when I got up from the table, I was sick. I went back upstairs and went to bed. I called in to work and said, I'm going to be a little late this morning. But I'd already made out the menus for a whole month. So the next morning, it was another big breakfast. And Mother had to be an example. So got this big breakfast, and when I got through with that, I was sick again. But that time, I didn't have to go upstairs and go to bed. I could struggle out and go to work, but I surely didn't feel good. Third morning, I didn't feel good, but I was not really sick. By the fourth morning, while I felt full, I didn't really feel too bad. And I guess it took me probably about 5 days to get accustomed to that. Now, there are two things about it. It's not just a big breakfast. It is also a light supper. And I was, at the same time that we started with a big breakfast, we also dropped dinner in the evening. So that we were, yes, completely dinner, but we did still serve fruit and sometimes a little cereal, just dry cereal with some fruit sauce on it and some fruit. And when we started in that process, it was in the middle of the summer. And these huge Georgia Bell peaches were just in season. We had these, you know, they just melted. You touch them, and they are so soft that they just sort of, you leave your fingerprints on them. We had these big Georgia Bell peaches, and we just had those for supper every night. And we ate plentifully of them, but, you know, not too much, but we ate rather abundantly at first. And then we got so that we would just eat maybe half piece of fruit, just a little tiny snack. Finally, I made a New Year's resolution. No more suppers. And I would leave work in the afternoon. I could picture in my mind's eye where every scrap of bread was in my refrigerator. And the whole world was filled with my hunger. There was nothing on my mind except, what could I eat? What could I eat if it were only here? And I would park my car. I knew that I couldn't face that refrigerator. So I would walk into our playroom, and there was a little group of stairs there that I had to walk up to get up into the kitchen. So I'd walk up into those, and I'd duck my head and go around into the living room like this and sit down and pick up the paper in order to avoid looking at the refrigerator. So I was afraid if I even looked at it that I wouldn't be able to resist opening it. Well, let's go ahead. We have just a little bit more. By the way, from January 1, which was when I made that resolution, no more suppers, until almost April, I struggled with my appetite for an evening meal, just like that. Finally, I said, I am not going to eat supper, and the devil might as well leave me alone, because I have decided I am not going to eat supper. And I think I sort of whistled in the dark a little bit. But maybe he heard me, because about that time, I started losing my appetite for supper. And I have no appetite for supper. I don't even think about it. And sometimes when I have guests that I have decided I'm going to serve them a supper, I forget it. I remember one time a lady came to our home. We had rolled out a red carpet for her. We were just really trying to just be extra gracious to her. So we showed her all around Yuchi Pines, and my daughter and I had flowers in her room. And we were just trying to be extra specially gracious. She was the mother of a dear friend of ours, and we had never met her before, and she'd never been to Yuchi Pines. So after we had had a good evening, and it was about 9 o'clock at night, we took her to her room, and we showed her there where she was to stay, and we got her all settled in. And then we walked down to our bedroom, and we were so pleased with ourselves. Everything had gone so well. And so I looked at Ann, and Ann looked at me, and we said, "Supper." Oh, so we went walking back down to her room. Oh, we are so embarrassed. We haven't served supper in our home in several years, and we forgot to offer you supper. Could we bring you some fruit or some toast or something like that? She said, "Well, a little fruit would be nice." We fixed her up a little tray, took it down to her. We put some flowers on it and folded the napkin real pretty to try to make up for her for forgetting to bring her the supper. I didn't require of them no supper. But I saw an article in a health magazine how it's better not to take supper. So right after a big lunch, sat down with my children. They, you know, don't ever make a dietary change on an empty stomach. Always feed your family well. So we had had a big lunch, and we sat down, and everything was, you know, it was one of these beautiful spring days like today, and we sat down together. And I said, "Honey, you know, Mother hasn't eaten supper for some time, and that's for health reasons. And notice this this article here in this health magazine that people who are interested in health, that's what they're doing. They're leaving off suppers. You want to leave off supper?" "Oh, yes, Mama. Yes, we'll leave off supper, too." So I said, "Well, fine. We'll have some other activity at night so that we won't even think about it in case we get hungry." "Yeah, that's fine. We'll do that." So we went right into it very easily, just like that.
What age?
Must have been about 9 and 12, something like that.
You don't do it like under 6 years old?
Oh, yes. Yes, you can train a child, and you should. Train your children to a two-meal plan between the ages of 1 and 3. 1 and 3. Yes. Brother McNeilis. Uh-huh. 4, 8, and 10.
Right. Uh-huh. Growing healthy boys.
Growing healthy boys. They sure are. Yes. Oh, yes. I found that too. Yes. 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 Friends of mine who have had this great privilege of starting their children early in life tell me that you will actually be interfering with nature if you have to notify your children. Now quit playing, it's time for you to have supper. But if they don't see it and don't smell it, they won't think about it. And then when you stop the suppers, they just have no thought about that at all. We'd always in our home had a very big evening meal. And I have about 3 minutes, and there are several hands. Maybe I'd better just go ahead and finish up. I just have 2 more slides. Let's keep our systems all strong by regularity, by doing the same thing at the same time every day. This alerts your immune system. Keep on a good schedule. Keep do your R&R at night. And then in the morning, wake up to hit 'em. And we can all do that. Everybody can wake up. They can put their feet out of bed with a smile on the lips and a song in the heart if you will just be regular in all of your habits. The earlier in life you start that, the better it is, the better you will sleep at night, and the more energy you will have in the morning. You should exercise daily to the point of sweating. You should keep the extremities habitually warm. Now, this I find to be one of the most difficult matters in health reform for women. Our clothing is not designed for that, and you will see a man and his wife sitting in church together, and he is sitting there with a long sleeve white shirt on and a lined jacket. And she will be sitting there in a sleeveless, flimsy, very thin fabric dress. And she is cold, and he is hassling with the heat. Satan knew just which one to overclothe and which one to underclothe. And so he who stimulates the fashions has made it so that it is difficult for a woman to find clothing that will be helpful. But it can be done nowadays, especially with so many women going into sports. You can find a lot of sports clothing that will help you to keep your extremities habitually warm. I think it is no happenstance that women who live in northerly climes have more cancer of the breast than do women who live in more warm climates, because they have, for a longer period of time and more intensely, they have chilled extremities. I find in Madison, Wisconsin, women walking around when I am dressed with three pairs of long johns, boots on, muffs on my ears, and they will be walking around with a long sleeve dress perhaps, and nylons and heels. I know they're cold. They couldn't possibly be, you know, ice all over the ground and temperature down to 33. Now, sunning yourself early and late, but not too much. Too much sun does weaken the immune system, apparently. One last thing. There are some things in the mind that if we do them, they will make us less healthy. Less healthy in the immune system. If the mind has heavy loads, and by all means, guilt is the one that puts the heaviest load on the immune system. Grief and jealousy and anxiety, discontent, remorse, distrust, all of these overwork, put heavy burdens on the mind. Then our spirits can be, our hands can hang down and our heads can be bowed by a lot of things that make us dispirited and discouraged. From the outside can come perhaps criticisms about our work, or criticisms about who we are, or belittlement of us because of who we are. And these things can make our spirits drag low. We need to develop courage and hope, faith and sympathy, love and rejoicing. And we need to make it our business to see to it that other people are happy as much as we can make them happy. That's not to say that when someone has done something that is wrong, they need a rebuke. We are not then to side with them in their sin. That is a sin on our part. And this kind of misplaced sympathy can be a great detriment to the spiritual growth of other people. Then our attitudes should be shaped by the truth. It is a scientific fact that falsehood does not strengthen the mind like the truth can, even if the falsehood is as firmly believed as the truth is firmly believed. Try to find truth and adhere to the truth, and the Lord will give you a great blessing. Let us bow for prayer. Dear Father, with joy we present ourselves before Thee, knowing that Thou dost delight in us, not because we feel worthy, but because You have told us that You delight in us. And because You have made such detailed provision for our care and for our rescue. And so now, we pray as we present ourselves before Thee, that we might be purified from all sin, that we might feel that close affection for Thee that can come only when we know that we have done our part to evict sin and to take care of the equipment which You have given to us. This is our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistries.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.